authors, writers, dreamers, all. Each day is an invitation to accept the call. I'm Brooke Warner from She Writes.
And I'm Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo. You're listening to Right Minded, weekly inspiration for writers. Welcome, word sprinters, word pushers, word tuggers, word huggers, word jumpers, and word dancers to another episode of Right Minded. I'm Grant Faulkner, Executive Director of NaNoWriMo, and a somewhat exhausted writer. And I'm here today with my wordy-minded co-host, Brooke Warner of She Writes.
Hey, Grant.
Hey, Brooke. Well, it's November 12th, which means that we are in the heart of NaNoWriMo and all of its joys and tribulations. So I'm curious, Brooke, how's your writing going? I know you're also writing during NaNoWriMo this year for the first time.
Yeah, totally. And it is going really well, I have to say. I mean, I have been gearing up for this for months and actually kind of using it as a safety net in a sense, because I keep thinking to myself, well, if I can write 1,000 words a day in November, I can just keep procrastinating until November. And that worked really well until November. And then once November hit, I turned on the gas hard because I am really, really trying to finish this book by the end of the year. So I've totally dived in here with 2 feet. I'm also doing this with my 7-year-old, James, and he is doing a comic strip, which is super cool. And his goal is to write one panel a night. I have been a little bit more successful than he has been so far. I actually am hitting 1,000 words every night so far. And so, yes, I'm thrilled. I'm really, really happy about it. And need to be. Need to be happy to keep going. So how about you, Grant? How's your word count coming along?
Yeah, I love that you're writing with your son. I've known several families who write novels together in November, and I can't imagine a better family life other than the small downside that no one has time to kind of maintain the house.
Right,
the dishes,
there's always
like
that.
But that's wonderful. And thanks for asking about my novel. My NaNoWriMo strategy every year is kind of the same. I always want to go fast out of the gate and try to get ahead of my word count targets to build in some cushion, because I've never had a NaNoWriMo where I didn't experience some hazards, whether it's getting sick or losing a weekend to a child's soccer tournament. So I'm doing well, but I have to say that the caveat on that is just I'm doing well for now. I'm at 22,000 words or so, so I still have some padding, but I am entering that muddy middle period that I'm very fearful of.
I still think that's impressive.
Yeah, thanks. Well, one thing I'm trying to really focus on this year is to take advantage of the nooks and crannies of time to reach my word count. So speaking of soccer tournaments, for example, I'm even trying to use that time to write when I'm at my kids' soccer games or practices. And so what that means is that instead of sitting on the sidelines like I usually do, just kind of scrolling through an endless stream of social media during halftime, I've been trying to remind myself to take out a notebook and actually write. And so I can write 10 minutes before the game, 10 minutes at halftime, maybe a few minutes afterwards, and that might produce 500, 600, 700 words perhaps. And so I'm trying to identify those moments in my life and take advantage of them, because I don't really have a period of 2 to 3 hours a day where I can write in one big chunk. I was inspired to do this by a quote from NaNoWriMo writer Hugh Howey, who has participated in NaNoWriMo since 2009. And he wrote Wool during NaNoWriMo, and then he wrote Sand as part of NaNoWriMo. And he wrote Sand while he was on this super busy author tour in Europe. And the quote is, he said, "I was writing on airplanes and in airports, every morning at hotels, in the back of taxis, on the sidewalk waiting for my publicist to pick me up. Learning that focus and having it reinforced every year through NaNoWriMo is what allows me to write for a living." So I was very inspired by him writing in all these kind of strange places and these strange little snatches of time. What's your biggest challenge this month, Brooke?
Yeah, it's inspiring what Hugh said, what he does or what he did, because in fact, that is my biggest challenge. I do feel like I need that kind of focused and dedicated time to write. I think in part that is something I impose on myself. This month, I've set this 1,000 words a night thing, and it's totally doable. But I've spent, as I mentioned, all year procrastinating on getting more of this book done, because I've set this trap for myself about the conditions needing to be right. And so for me, the right conditions have meant not being on mom duty, that I am in the right frame of mind, that I have at least an hour to write, if not 2 hours. And the problem with these right conditions, as you were alluding to, you know, if you're trying to find the nooks and crannies, is that they never manifest. I don't have a 2-hour window at at night, because by the time my son goes to sleep, I'm exhausted and I'm often not in the right frame of mind, right? I mean, it's just, I don't have this inspired space that I'm in the mood hardly ever. And I know from experience that when I sit down and do the work, that's often when the inspiration comes. So what's been really good for me so far about this month and doing NaNoWriMo is that it's been blowing all of those conditions out of the water. Enrolling my son in the process has been hugely helpful, because I'm sure a lot of parents can relate to having parent guilt. I definitely suffer from mom guilt. And so if I'm not like attending to him and his needs, I struggle. And so in this way, he is getting to see what I do and why it's important. And he's having his own creative process. And I'm still getting to bed by 10:30 or 11, which I just have to say is late for me. So it's good. I feel like I'm pressing myself and working and up against my challenges and trying to overcome them a bit. So And how about you, Grant? I mean, biggest challenge?
Well, other than time, which you explored very well, we share the same challenge there. This is the moment that always I hit a wall during NaNoWriMo. I call it the muddy middle. It's that place in the novel where, you know, my story starts to sink in the swamp, and many novels go to die in that swamp, unfortunately. And part of that is that I start to doubt the whole idea that, you know, like I've hit kind of a creative wall, my imagination is burned out, and I start, you know, questioning the idea itself. And when I doubt my story idea, I think about how, you know, those other novel ideas I turned down in favor of this one, they all look better now. They all look more exciting. but by doing that, I've set up a mindset of failure, you know. Like, it's harder to write when I'm questioning the very premise of writing something. And what this means is that my inner editor has started to creep back into my mind and perhaps roar and bang on lots of things. So I've got to banish him more forcefully than ever now. And this is also, I think, a dangerous time for many writers, because if you kind of start to tail off on your word count, maybe you skip a couple days or a few days, and then, you know, that gap between you and your word count target, it starts to widen and you feel like you can't catch up. And so people just quit at that moment. And so if anyone out there is thinking of doing this, please don't. You know, I think you have to plan for lapses in any big project. You have to accept outright dead ends sometimes, and then figure out a way to restart. And so when I hear these stories of people wanting to quit at this stage, I always tell them, just keep going just for the sake of writing. Like, you'll feel better even if you write 5,000 or 10,000 more words this month than if you quit. And if you write some words, they usually lead to more words. So that one good day of writing can get you right back and propel you toward 50,000 words.
Yeah. And we're talking about psychology and time right now. And I see those so much being the two biggest obstacles that writers are facing during this time. And you brought up the inner editor. I think it's important to let people know that you're probably going to be visited by your inner critic at this time as well, which is similar, except that the inner critics tend to criticize everything about you and who you are as a person, not just your writing. It can be pretty brutal. So just thinking through, you know, what are the things that are challenges and finding ways around them. It can be really hard during the muddy middle, of course. And there's also all of these inspiring tools that are available for you at NaNoWriMo to get through this time, talking to other people, looking at what other people are doing for inspiration. Grant, how do you advise people get through this time of the muddy middle, understanding that, you know, once you're stuck, it's hard to get unstuck?
It's true. That's why I think you need to just shake up your writing process. You know, for me, it's intimidating sometimes to open up my laptop and I'll see that next chapter that I'm supposed to write and the blank screen. The blank screen becomes very intimidating sometimes. So sometimes I think you should shut your computer down. I like to do some what I call what if brainstorming on paper, not on the computer. And I just go crazy writing down possible scenarios, possible characterizations, just to shake up the ideas in my head and take a break. But I also want to encourage people to take advantage of NaNoWriMo's famous word sprints. That's when these really come in handy. And they're going on around the clock on Twitter at NaNoWordSprints. Or you can go to your local write-ins, which are organized by our municipal liaisons, or at libraries in your communities that are hosting NaNoWriMo events. You can also use our word sprint tool on the NaNoWriMo website to do your own private word sprints, or to invite friends and do them together online. So I think there are a lot of different kinds of techniques you can do to recharge your writing. But beyond that, like as I was saying, I need to reaffirm my belief in my own idea. And I know that every writer has to write a draft of a novel just to explore and test the idea. I have to tell myself that. And I also know that new, unexpected surprises await me. So tomorrow or next week or 5 minutes from now, I might get a great idea that re-energizes me. So I guess I'm saying that at that very moment that I feel like quitting is the exact moment not to quit. Like, that's the irony of it all. So also, I've promised to give myself the prize of a massage if I hit 50,000 words, which I desperately need right now. So I've got to keep writing. Do you do any kooky rewards like this, Brooke? Does that work for you?
You know, Grant, I suck at rewarding myself, even though I'm always recommending that the writers I work with do exactly that. So it's so easy to have good ideas and to be like, yeah, I'm totally going to do that. It's less easy to implement them, I've found. So for me, the word count is the reward. And actually, our guest today, Jennifer Alban, is going to speak to that. We pre-recorded her interview, and I liked that she was talking about just like how awesome it feels to get the word count done, especially as I've been saying all year, I've been trying to rev up to do this and I just have been falling short. So I get really excited with myself when I see the word documents start to come together and the book taking shape. And so I guess I'm saying that that is its own reward, but there is this extension of not practicing enough self-care, right? That we just push through, we don't give enough attention to the hard work, or we overlook rewarding ourselves. And this is actually a habit I'd really like to break. So I do want to do something, and actually I was thinking of something kind of fun. Like originally I was thinking a dinner in San Francisco, you know, something ridiculously over the top that I wouldn't normally do. But then I was thinking, you know, a really good indulgence for me would be to get like a Fenton's sundae, something like ridiculously big and over the top that is something I never allow myself. So if you agree to it, Grant, we'll go celebrate together at Fenton's and we can put some pictures up on social media.
That sounds great. I haven't treated myself to a sundae in ages, especially one at Fenton's. And I do want to, you said to treat yourself to something ridiculously, something ridiculous and over the top. So
yes,
that's great advice for people in the muddy middle. Look forward to treating yourself to something ridiculous and over the top. Let's take a brief break now, Brooke, and return to dive in deeper with Jennifer. Well, hey, everyone. I'm excited to talk with Jennifer Alban today because Jennifer is one of the first published NaNoWriMo authors who I got to know when I started working here way, way back in 2012. Jennifer did her first NaNoWriMo in 2010, and she has participated nearly every November since then. She wrote the rough draft of Cruel during NaNoWriMo and then went on to publish the Cruel World Trilogy, which also includes Altered and Unraveled. And Jennifer is many things beyond a writer, though. She holds a master's degree in English literature from the University of Missouri. She's also a mom, and she recently moved to Seattle and opened a bookstore and a board game cafe, which sounds super fun. Congrats on the new venture, Jennifer, and welcome.
It's two new ventures, actually, so they're separate individuals. I'm a crazy person.
So there's a bookstore and a board game cafe.
There's a bookstore and a board game cafe. We are taking over a small town outside of Seattle.
That sounds great. I want to do a little bit of time traveling. I want to go back to your first NaNoWriMo in 2010. And tell us like who you were, where you were, what you were doing, and why did you do NaNoWriMo?
NaNoWriMo came to me at a time where I was getting a lot of suggestions from the people in my life that I should write a book because I talked about doing it for so many years. But I had no idea how to do that. I understood that you wrote a story and that you tried to make it a couple hundred pages long, but the process of sitting down and telling a story that was a couple hundred pages long seemed completely insane to me. I mean, I think one of the reasons I sort of flaked out of grad school was I was terrified of a dissertation. So how in the world was I going to write a story? And I'd been toying with it for a while, and I'd written a couple first chapters and abandoned them. And lo and behold, and I cannot tell you where I first read National Novel Writing Month, but I remember clicking on a link and it taking me to this site where all of these people were going to sit down in November and they were going to write a book, come hell or high water, 50,000 words, which seemed like a heck of a lot. And I thought, okay, this is it. This is my chance. And I went to my husband and said, I would like to write a book in November with this National Novel Writing Month. I want to try to get to 50,000 words. And we had a baby, a small baby at the time. She was about, I think she was 8 or 9 months old. So it was going to take his help. He had to take the baby, and I didn't have a computer. So I'd go to the library and actually write on the library, and they still had time limits then on their computers. And so I would do that almost every single day. So almost every single day in November of 2010, I went to the library and I started working on this book. And I met up with the local NaNoWriMo group. And then very sadly, they would all be sitting on their computers in the little library section. I'd be like, "Hey guys, see you at the end. I'm going to go over to that bank of computers next to the guy watching YouTube videos and work for the next hour." But I was just a stay-at-home mom who had no idea how to write a book. And I sat down and wrote my first rough draft of what turned out to be my first novel.
I love that story for numerous reasons. And I love the quote. I read your interview on the NaNoWriMo blog from several years ago. And you said, "My husband started to tease me that my obituary would read author of the 20 most promising first chapters ever written." And as someone who's written a lot of hopefully promising first chapters, but nothing beyond that, I wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit about your earlier proclivity to write first chapters and then not to finish the novel.
I think I would have this great idea. I kind of always have a hook when I sit down. So I always have that spark or kernel of an idea. And I think that would make a great story. And so I would sit down and just kind of throw myself into what would probably be a first chapter. And I would write it. And then I'd think, I have no idea what to do from here. Like, I don't know if I'm interested. I don't know where this goes. And I had a tendency at the time to show it to my husband and say, "Here, read this," because he's a prolific reader. And he'd be like, "This is really good. You should, where do you think it's going to go? And I can't wait to read the next chapter." And for some reason, I think that that made me more scared. So he read all of these first chapters that really never went anywhere because I just didn't know what to do past that first chapter, the first couple of chapters, and it would kind of taper off. So NaNo was actually a great experience because I basically said, "Well, who cares? I've got to get to 50,000 words." And there was a heck of a lot in that NaNo draft that made no sense at all, but I got 50,000 words in.
Good. It's all about progress and get the words on the page.
For sure. I can attest to that. And we have another quote from one of your pep talks, this is also from the NaNo pep talk that you wrote. And it says, "The real secret is that anyone can write a book. There's no initiation ceremony, no dues to pay. You don't need a special degree from a fancy school. Writing is for everyone." And so this is so up the alley of obviously the spirit of NaNoWriMo and what I'm doing at She Writes and this podcast too. So I'm hearing you say that you're going to do this in your cafe. So can you talk a bit about your own draw to community? I mean, is this part of just wanting to give back or part of your spirit of how you approach things in general?
I think that there's always that sense of wanting to give back. And I particularly love to give back to writers and hopeful writers, because I think no matter what stage you're at in your career, whether you've published 17 books or whether you're just the author of 20 most promising first chapters ever written, that you kind of always need someone there to just go, "It's okay, you can still do this," because it's hard. It's hard to face a blank page. And writing is, even when you're sitting in a room full of people, an incredibly solitary activity. And all of the people in those stories exist almost solely in your head, and you have to give them life, and you're in this sort of process of birthing, and it's the longest labor ever, and there's no epidurals. And so being in this group, in this room where everyone's doing it, there's something about that that just makes it feel a little bit less lonely, because it can get really lonely to be a writer. So for me, November becomes almost like a reset button. Like, it's the true kind of beginning / end of the year where you kind of come back and you say, "Why am I doing this? And who am I doing this with? And I'm not alone." And there's this whole community, and creativity is this really shared force that sort of unites us all. I'm not the only person crazy enough to want to do this, because sometimes you feel really crazy as a writer because people are talking in your head, and that's probably why. But I just love that sense of community that you have when you sit down, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, Jennifer, I want to do a little bit more time traveling and going back to 2010. I'm so interested in the story of you writing in those like kind of intense periods in the library. And it reminds me of a story of Ray Bradbury, because he did a very similar thing when he first started writing. He wrote during his lunch breaks for a half an hour at the UCLA library, and he had to pay for the typewriter, and he wanted to get cost efficiency out of the 30 minutes. And so he wrote as much as he could, as fast as he could in that 30 minutes on the typewriter. And it sounds like you were doing a similar thing in your library.
Oh, I absolutely was. At the time, I think I said there were time limits. There was literally a ticking clock when you would log on, and it would tell you, I think it was 70 minutes. And so it would just start counting down. To this day, I've tried putting all sorts of apps on my computer that do the same thing, because I swear I was never more prolific than I was during that 70 minutes in the library. And it never quite works the same. Maybe there's no librarian that's going to come and boot me off. But I was just trying to get to my word count. So you were like, I've got to get to that today, or I know I'm not going to be able to come tomorrow because of babies. And so I've got to hit twice that amount. And you always have in your mind exactly how much you have to get done. And then when you add in that ticking clock, I used all sorts of crazy tricks. I was constantly on the forums reading up on what people suggested. There would be writing prompts. I would do a writing prompt. There would be people who were like, turn your font color to white so you can't see anything you're typing, so you don't know there's a typo. I've done that. So, I mean, I did all sorts of crazy things to try to get as much productivity as possible in that really tiny time frame.
Well, and Jennifer, how important is it now, in your opinion, in terms of believing in yourself as a writer, to be able to hit some kind of word count? I mean, does that 50,000 words matter, or is it only in the context of NaNoWriMo that it's mattered to you?
I would say that almost all of my published books are considerably longer than that. They range from, you know, I think I have one that's 55,000 and I have one that's 103,000. But there's something about, there's certain numbers in your mind, and when you're writing things, you kind of know that when you hit it, you're like, okay, this is going to work. Because up until that point, you're thinking, I'm going to run out of words. At least I am. I know there are people that write too many words and they have to cut them. I am not that person. Every word is hard for me. I have to really, really work at it. And so 50,000 for me is always a marker that this is going to work. This is going to be a book. It may still need another 50,000. It may need 25,000. It may be 5,000. But the bulk of this story, the core of this story is here. I can turn 50,000 words into a book. I know I can. So I don't know if subconsciously that's because my first book was birthed in NaNoWriMo, and so that's my magic number that I've given it. But I can tell you, I used to have for years, and I still have it somewhere, my printout from when I got to my 50,000 words on the last day of November that year on the fridge. It was like, I did this. 50,000 words. I can do anything.
Yeah, so motivating.
Well, hey, Jennifer, this is going to air in the muddy middle of NaNoWriMo on November 12th. And this is the toughest part of a novel for me, and I know for many people. And I love actually the constraint, like writing within a tight time constraint to get through the muddy middle, to force yourself to get words on the page. But I'm wondering if you have any other advice for kind of trudging through this swampy part of a novel.
I think that one of the things you do, and I certainly did this with my first novel, and it's not something I do now necessarily. I've learned as a writer that all books want to be written in a different way. And if your book wants to be written chronologically, then you're probably not going to talk it out of being written chronologically. But occasionally you'll have a book that lets you jump around or lets you start at the end. It is totally okay to say, I don't know exactly how this works out here right now. And I'm going to either jump over this and go to a scene that I can see in my head because I've got to get my word count down, or I'm going to start at the end and work my way backwards, or even this scene is going to be really hard and I've got to get it just right. So I want to spend more time on it. And I'm going to write a 2-paragraph summary of what happens here and move on. Do what you have to do to get the word count in November, because what you are writing right now, unless you're the most exceptional writer of all time, is not going to be publishable. You're going to be spending December, January, February editing that and making everything work. Don't get it bogged down in the details. The reason it's the muddy middle and the reason that published books even sometimes lag in the middle, is that we get so obsessed with, well, I've got to get this scene written. Sometimes we should skip that scene and figure out what's not working with it and move on. It's okay to move on to a part of the novel that you can see working.
Oh, I'm going to just shift gears a little bit to ask you about time, because in The Muddy Middle, Grant and I have been saying, you know, it's, psychology is an issue sometimes, you know, getting in your own way, but certainly time. And so you have these two new businesses, you're taking over Seattle, you have children. How do you find the time to write?
I've been very fortunate since I sold Cruel. I've been a full-time writer. And so this is the first year, really, where I've been back to having a lot of obligations outside of just the writing. And it's been a real interesting, because when I say I was a full-time writer, my husband was a stay-at-home dad. So now he has a coffee shop, so he is not staying at home. And my sister was actually my full-time assistant for the last 3 years, and now she runs the bookstore. So I had a staff. And that's actually been really tricky for me, because there's so much business of publishing and divorcing myself. And I've had to make really clear expectations with the people in my life. And I think that this works whether you're a published writer who's struggling with all of the demands on your time, because everybody wants you to do publicity and marketing and planning for this book and that book. Or if you've got a day job that you're going to, you have to kind of say, this is a priority to me, and I'm going to figure out how to prioritize that. And there's a couple tricks that I've used, and I kind of have to employ them at different times based on what's going on in my life, because it doesn't, sometimes I can't do certain things. But one of them is kind of, I think a friend of mine calls it brain hacking. And that's the idea that if your brain is kind of like a computer, that the first thing that you do in the morning is going to be the thing that processes. I don't actually know if this is how computers work. The first thing that you do in the morning, the first app that you open, if you will, is going to be the thing that takes up the most processing power for the day. So if what you do is you get on your phone and you mess around and you get on Facebook or you go into work, then you might not ever get to writing in that day. You might be completely distracted by all of these other things. But I will often try to first thing in the morning, free write pages in a journal, even if that's not my writing for the day. It sets my precedent for the day that this is something that I'm going to do. But then in terms of actually like making time and carving out time, I hear a lot from people when I tell them I'm an author that they would love to be an author, or they would love to write a book, or they would love to be more creative, but they don't have time. And I've started becoming much more assertive in myself in the last few years, because I'll just look at and be like, yeah, you do. And the look that they give you back when you tell someone no, and you call them on that, is people don't like to be told that. But the truth of the matter is that we all get on our phones and check Facebook. We all turn on the TV. We all sit and read something while we're eating lunch. And there are all sorts of opportunities in the day, whether it's for 10 minutes here or there, to actually sit down and start writing. Some of the best things I've ever written, I've just pulled out my phone while I'm at like a kid's soccer game and bored out of my mind, and just started writing things down because, you know, the refs have them off to the side or whatever. So there's always some time that you can find. There's always that lunch break with the computer that you, or the, with the typewriter that you're paying per minute for, right? Like where you can actually make that time. One of my friends who is a prolific writer and who is a huge bestseller wrote her entire book on a cell phone while she was like riding the subway and stuff. Like this, this is a real thing. You can find the time in your day. If you get obsessed with the idea of it always being perfect, finding the perfect coffee shop, finding the perfect notebook, finding the perfect place to sit down, having the perfect moment, you'll never do it. If you wait for perfect moments in your life, you're never going to do the things that you want to do. You have to find time. You have to say it's a priority. It's okay to do that, and you deserve to do that.
Absolutely. That's great advice, whether it's before NaNoWriMo or in the Muddy Middle. And since we're in the Muddy Middle now with our writers, can you give one bit of motivational advice to conclude the podcast here? Like send them off with some gusto.
I used to, for a really long time, have a sticker on my computer that you guys gave me back in the day. And it said, your story matters. And I can give you lots of practical advice. But the thing I think that is the hardest thing when you're trying to write your first book or your 10th book is that there's always this sense of who cares? Who cares other than you? And there's so much going on in the world and there's so much going on in your life. And you think, well, why am I even doing this? And especially in the middle, when things start to get hard and the story starts to get hard, there's a tendency to want to back away from that difficulty. Your story matters. There's a reason that you started that story. There's a reason why you felt called to do that. And it's important.
That's right.
No one has to validate that for you. You have to choose to believe that yourself. And when you do that, you will be capable of more than you can possibly imagine.
That's a great closing message, Jennifer. Thanks so much. Everyone's story matters. Believe it. It'll keep you writing in November and beyond. So thanks so much for joining us, Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
All right, today's writing action, getting through the muddy middle. I think the trick to the muddy middle is to find a way to nourish the mystery in your novel. So I'd like to advise people to do three things. Let's brand this something entirely unsexy, like the three-pronged approach to get through the muddy middle. That's really very inviting, right? So first thing, do some time travel. By that, I mean go back to the very first moment you got the idea for your story and try to remember your early excitement. It's so easy to forget what drew us to the idea in the first place, our novel ideas, but I think if we go back and kind of re-experience that wide-eyed curiosity, it can help refuel us and kind of we can revisit that origin moment. Secondly, write for mystery. Don't write what you know, write what you want to know. So by this I mean to kind of let go of reality. Don't be pragmatic, just trust yourself to create new worlds and live in them this month. Like let your characters take over the story. And then three, give yourself a break. So this means two things. Don't beat yourself up if you're behind on your word count or you're just not feeling it. This happens to everyone and you'll get through it, trust me. One way to get through it is to do something creatively nourishing. So take a break from the page, go to a movie, read your favorite author or novel, play your guitar, whatever it is. Just do something off the page and let your thoughts breathe and roam a bit.
Well, everybody, we hope that you're doing well with NaNoWriMo. It's also not too late to get started, even if you haven't started, so consider that. Remember that Right Minded is a weekly podcast. We have two more weeks of NaNo excitement going on, so join us. Please download on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and please give us some stars, a review. We're still looking to bring on new listeners, and we appreciate so much you being with us. We'll see you next week.